This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you're listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 11th, episode 1060, Good Morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning, you never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
That's right. We do have the famous Mary Kitzmiller with us today. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
I am great. It's so good to have you on. I met Mary, let's see here, back at Road to the Horse, I think. We hung out for a little bit together watching, and I've been working on her ever since to try and get her to come on here once a month and do a training episode, and I finally won.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be on here, and this will be fun for me. I've only been on for a couple minutes here and there, so I'm really excited to kind of see where this takes us.
You know, Mary has been a regular guest on the show since March, I think, of last year, and you played a couple of the games with us and won some and lost some, like the rest of us have. So, but you've always been a good sport about it. Anytime I asked Mary, she would come on and do it, and I really appreciate that. Mary's going to be doing a training episode with us the second Thursday of every month from now on, and we're excited to have her aboard. And, of course, you know, training is something that we can talk endlessly about when it comes to horses and riders. And Mary brings a different perspective in that she has had a lot of experience in this world, and we're going to talk a lot more about that, getting to know Mary a little bit in the first part of the show. But first off, Jennifer is going to tell us what is coming up on today's show.
On today's Training with Mary Thursday adventure, Mary lays down the law with her training tip, teaching your horse to lay down on command. And then next up, Sean Patrick stops by with an update on how his upcoming New Smyrna Beach Symposium has come together. What can you think of that's better than going to New Smyrna Beach, Florida, in the middle of winter to do horse stuff? And skidding into the finish, Wylene Wilson puts a handle on a horse. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, you know, it is going to be fun to see you. We're hoping to get over. You're going to be coming to Florida here in a couple of weeks, and you'll be going down to Sean's place. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But hopefully we'll get over and get to say hi and get to see you again. So that'll be fun.
Yeah,
well, Mary,
I can't wait.
Let's talk a little bit about you. The audience, some of them will know you from your appearances on the show here and from the Road to the Horse coverage, but so we have a lot of new listeners as well, so let's get to know you a little bit. I was reading your bio, and it was fascinating, and I know he died when you were young, and you never really got to meet him, but you were the granddaughter of a rodeo cowboy who did some amazing things.
That's right. My grandpa, my mom's dad, was, I mean, a cowboy in every sense of the word. And he's from, I believe the family's from South Dakota. They're up in Wyoming. And he did everything. He was all around cowboy until he stopped the bull riding. I guess his best friend broke his back doing it. But he did all the other events he can do at rodeo. He broke horses for the cavalry. And he rode in Madison Square Gardens for Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. And
I've
got to know him through pictures. We've got a lot of great photos of him on horses. And because of that, my mom always, you know, she wanted a horse her entire life. And she never got to live that out until I came along. And so my first horse was really her first horse. So I think I'm the only one in my family who's really kind of carrying on the horse tradition.
Oh, was that right? Do you have
yeah.
Brothers, sisters?
I have a brother, and he is in the Army, and fixing to head overseas once again. And I think he did a tour in Afghanistan, and he was on a horse until he fell off, and then that was about it. but he decided special forces training was
oh, yeah.
much
yeah,
easier.
That, that's safer than riding horses.
Exactly.
Let's go out and get shot at. That's much better.
Yeah, that's his cup of tea. And then of course, you know, he realized you have to clean up after the horse. So we both rode when we were kids, and I was kind of the one who stuck with it and kept on going.
Now, what kind of riding did you do when you were a kid?
Well, the barn we went to, they just started me English. I was totally expecting to go and ride Western, and I think they had Western riding, but for some reason they threw me an English saddle and a helmet, and so that's what I did for several years, and I rode. I meddled in hunters and did a little bit of jumping and cross country and dressage, and that's what I did up until I got into mules.
So I didn't realize you did all of that you actually jumped and stuff.
Yeah, not very high. Probably the highest I ever went was about 3 feet. So, but yeah, that's what I did. Yeah, that was what I decided to. That was plenty good.
Now, did you ever have a desire? Do you ever have a desire now? Obviously, you went Western there at some point. Do you ever have a desire now to go back and ride English again at any point?
Not like as a profession or full time, but yes, I really want to go back and take some jumping lessons because for some reason, all these Western events I've been doing, they throw in these massive jumps. They threw one at us last year at Road to the Horse. We had to jump this huge thing of burlap that was about 2'6". And when you're jumping in a Western saddle, if you don't get your position right, it gets a bit weird. And I noticed my timing with horses over obstacles has gotten a little bit off. So I want to get back into English and work on kind of the fundamentals of jumping in my seat. And just to improve my seat, I had a really good seat when I rode English. And you know, when you're training, and especially when you're riding Western, you kind of start depending on that Western saddle a little bit, and you lose your seat a little bit. So, I'd love to get back into it.
You were being kind. When you jump incorrectly in a Western saddle, it just plain hurts. You were being
yeah,
kind.
Yeah, it's no fun. It's no fun. Well, yeah. And I'm trying to jump my current horse, Guthrie, to get him ready because I know there will be a jump in that obstacle course. I can't tell you how many times I've lost both stirrups, landed on his neck, and because he's not a jumper either. So it's the blind leading blind.
Well, let's, before we get to modern day, let's talk a little bit too. A lot of people may not know that you went to college and have a degree in something that we wouldn't expect.
Yeah, you know, I was just always kind of assumed I would go to college, which I think was a really good idea to do that. And I've drawn ever since I was little, and of course I drew horses, and so I went to school for art. I majored in fine arts, and I got in trouble because I made every project I wanted to make it about horses. And so I went and got my degree, which I'm glad I did, but it was about my senior year I decided I was skipping classes to ride horses, and I thought, you know, if I go and get a career in something, and I had a minor in marketing, so I thought maybe graphic design, and I decided, you know, if I get a job after college, as you're prone to do, I wouldn't get to spend as much time with the horses, so I kind of just put my diploma in a drawer and decided to go be an assistant trainer and start horses.
That's what everybody does with their diplomas that are horse people. That's what
exactly
happens.
Exactly.
Now, I can see the professor coming up to you saying, okay, now this was supposed to be a still life of fruit. Why does the orange look like a horse head?
That's exactly how it went. Yeah, he'd say, I want you to paint something in the style of Mondrian. I'm like, can it be a Mondrian horse? You know, but, and he, we were supposed to do a sculpture, and my professor, I had been playing around with pipe cleaners, and, you know, because my mom owns a shop, and I was sitting in her shop working at the shop down the road one day and making these little sculptures out of pipe cleaners. I said, can I make something out of that? He goes, don't you think that's a bit childish? So then I had to do it. So I spent all weekend, and I made a pipe cleaner horse, a rearing horse, and he was about 4 feet tall.
Out of pipe cleaners? 4 feet tall?
That's a lot of pipe cleaners.
It was
hundreds of pipe cleaners, and a 3D horse, and I got picked for the student art show that year because of that horse.
Wow. Made out of pipe cleaners. Well, you went on and obviously have had a successful career in the horse world. But, you know, one of the things that was on your resume, and we haven't had a chance to talk about a lot here on the show, is your work with mules. You actually showed mules for years.
Yeah, I kind of fell into mules, and I love them. They're wonderful, wonderful animals. And my mom wanted a mule, and I was like, "You're crazy. What do we do with it? We don't pack anything." And we ended up going to a sale and buying one, and found out that there were mule shows. I'm like, "Well, what are they going to do with these things?" And we went to a big mule show, and it was just like an AQHA show. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is cool. They're doing Western pleasure. They're doing horsemanship, only it's called mulemanship. And then if you show donkey, it's donkeymanship. And they're jumping them. They're running barrels, which donkey barrel racing is very thrilling to watch. And so I showed mules for several years, and I still have my first really successful show mule. He's sitting in my barn right now. And they're great animals. And I tell horse trainers, you know, I get asked by horse trainers from time to time, someone wants me to bring in a mule. You know, what do you think? How are they different? And I don't know who said it. It might have been Pat Pirelli, but he said, a mule is like a horse, only more so. And that's exactly right. And, you know, if you're a horse trainer, training mules is like graduate work for horse training.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. It just takes it up another notch. Yeah, interesting. I mean, there's so much we can talk about here. I'm trying to give the audience a little bit of an overview of who you are and where you've come from. How did you end up then wanting to get into the Mustang makeovers?
Well, you know, I actually went through a period of time where I didn't like Mustangs, believe it or not. One of the jobs where I worked, the trainer wanted us to start Mustangs and said, if you can start Mustangs, you can start anything. And I was barely experienced at starting colts. And so these Mustangs had my number. We started several of them, and they did everything that a horse can do to you. They bucked and bit and kicked and reared and struck. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are hard. I don't want anything to do with
that. Dart class.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, the Mustang makeover rolled out, and I saw how great it was and what a success it was, and it looked really fun. I'm like, but you got to train Mustangs. But I was seeing, you know, kids working with Mustangs and women who were in their 80s working with Mustangs. I'm like, well, heck, you know, if they can do it, maybe I ought to get back into it. So I went ahead and dove right in and got a Mustang, and by then I'd had a lot more years of knowledge, a lot more patience, a lot more understanding. And so it went great, and it's been a really good ride. I've really loved it.
Now, you were in the Mustang Million and came in fifth place, right?
Yes. That was kind of – that's one of my favorite little successes there.
Well, you won $50,000. That didn't hurt.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. It made it worth it just a little bit. you about spend that much in time and energy and whatnot for that horse. It was great. I was really excited to kind of be up there with some of the people who've made their names in it, like Bobby Kerr and Tom Hagwood and Dan James. And so I was really excited to kind of be up in that group and make the finals. And, I mean, there's nothing else in the world like it.
Is there something that you find with the Mustangs that has been consistent? Is there something that with the ones you've worked with that has been consistently challenging that you found with almost all of them that are one of the biggest challenges you have?
Yes, and that's the fact that they actually remind me of mules, believe it or not. They're much more flighty than your typical mule, but as flighty as a Mustang is and as fearful as they can be, you can't intimidate them to do anything. You can't kind of put the screws to them and say, you must do this. You have to constantly find ways around normal training methods to say, okay, this works with most horses, but with you, we're going to have to try something different. And that's been pretty consistent with all the Mustangs. As far as like specific training issues, I've noticed a lot of Mustangs are really tough about getting their shoulders to loosen up as far as steering and turning around. And I don't know if that has to do with the way they're built, or I've noticed that horses that are protected, when they protect themselves, the last body part they want to give up is typically their shoulder. And because when you see horses kind of playing and fighting in the pasture, they're pushing each other around with their heads and necks oftentimes, and mules do this as well. And so that's kind of been a consistent, and again, because you can't intimidate them, you can't just like spur them over and say, move over. You have to constantly look for a place to release and look for a place to reward. So they're slightly different than your typical domestic horse. And quarter horses, you know, I've trained wild quarter horses, but they still have those bloodlines and they still have some experience with people. And so they kind of get on your team a lot quicker than a Mustang will.
Now, is that what led you to be noticed and then asked to do Road to the Horse Wild Card last year for the first time?
Yes, I think that was an incredibly huge help in that because, you know, although it's not Road to the Horse, the Mustang Makeover, it's a training competition. You do have to, be really savvy to be able to train a wild Mustang and win. And so doing that helped for sure. And I have also gotten to know Tootie and Patty through the Mustang Makeovers, but also they've done a couple of other events, Project Cowboy and Project Cowgirl, and got to know them both through that. And Patty was gracious enough to actually write me a recommendation letter for my Road to the Horse application.
And you actually came in last year at Road to the Horse as a wild card competitor. You were second, right?
Yes. I was really excited. I got second. That was a tough competition, but was really excited with my placing. I kind of felt like, you know, I got a pretty good deal because I went and got my second place and plenty respectable, and then I got to go watch other guys ride wild horses. So it was nice.
Yeah, we were rooting for you, though. I think the whole crowd was really rooting for you because you're one of the very few women in that world, and the whole crowd was on your side.
Yeah, I believe. You know, I'm used to going to competitions and you know, just kind of putting your head down and competing and you know, getting congratulations from family and friends. But you go to Road to the Horse, and everybody's on your side, no matter who you are, and the response I got, especially from other women, I wasn't expecting that. You know, a lot of women came up and were really, like, excited that I was doing it and, you know, were saying, you know, you've proved, you made me think I can do it. And so it was a really cool experience. I've never had an experience like that before.
Well, and part of what you did, and I got to ask you about this, and I know it has an official name, but I come from the English side, and I know I probably should know more about it, but again, we come from the English side of things. So the whole pole dancing thing, and I maybe I should reword that, the whole riding with the pole thing.
Yeah. That's okay. It's pole dancing is cool.
It is pole dancing. It's just a different. You actually have clothes on when you're doing it. So
exactly.
Tell us about that.
I saw someone, Mark Lyon, ride in his freestyle one year at the Mustang Makeovers. Actually, he won that year with this long wooden pole, and he was turning, like, you hold the pole in one hand, and he was steering the horse with the other hand, and he was doing all these beautiful circles and lead changes and spinning under the pole, and I thought, what the heck is that? That looks really cool. And so I started researching, and it's actually called a garrocha, and I'm probably butchering how you're supposed to pronounce that. But it started in Spain, and it's actually originally used. Well, I mean, the origins go back to, you know, the lance in medieval times, but typically they use it for training bullfighting bulls and for working stock. And so that was their equivalent of the lariat, and that's how they move them around. That's how they bait them to see if they have any fight in them. But then it evolved into its own. Obviously, to work that thing, it's a 13-foot-long pole, and you've got a horse that has to handle well one-handed, and you have to be really savvy in how you work it so you don't impale yourself or pole vault yourself under the saddle.
Coordination involved.
Exactly. So it became its own discipline. So it's a little bit of dressage. It's a little bit, you know, classical riding. It's a little bit of everything. And so I started doing it in my freestyles. And I didn't think I just came up with it just to, and I actually got my first pole from Mark Lyon, who was the first one to really do it at the Mustang Makeovers. And I was just going in there because I couldn't come up with anything else. I was like, well, my horse can't sit in a car. I'm never going to be that guy. I can't really rope a cow. And, well, why don't I try this? And I decided to up the ante and take the bridle off of my horse. So not only does my horse not have a bridle, but one of my hands is occupied maneuvering this pole, and you can't fake bridleless riding if you've got a pole in your hand. If your horse is just kind of running around and you're not doing anything with the pole, people are going to know you don't really have control.
Right.
So, and it went really well. Like, people really, really liked it and really caught on, and it worked out great. So, any chance I get to work with that pole, I love doing it. And I've started teaching clinics on how to get started with it myself, because I had a lot of people ask. And it's so good for your horses.
I think what really made it, special, I mean, it's pretty anyway, but what made it special was the bridleless. I mean, that just took it to that next level, which is what you have to do when you're competing at a competition like that. You know, you can't be ordinary, because the ordinary doesn't stand out in that group of competitors.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, the audience has seen people work with the pole before, so you don't want them rolling their eyes, go, oh, another one of these. You have to take it to the next step, and eventually I'm going to be brave enough to do it bareback and bridleless with the pole one day. We'll see.
Keep working out at the gym.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk more about Mary. There's so much more that we want to get to, including a little bit more about your artsy side. But right now, every month at this time, Mary's going to do a trainer's tip. So what are we talking about this month?
Well, I've got a thing I've been working on the last few years, and I've just got a DVD out about it, and that is how to get a resistance-free laydown with your horse.
Oh, okay.
And, Yeah.
It seems to be a thing. Let me ask you about that before you get into this. It does seem to be a thing now that everybody doing exhibitions and stuff like that does the lay down thing. But, you know, I don't remember 10, 15 years ago that everybody was doing it. Now it seems to be a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like required now. If you're going to do a cool exhibition, your horse should probably lay down. It's almost become a fundamental thing to do with your horse. And you know, where I first saw laying a horse down being used was with troubled horses. And that's how I was taught to do it, was with a lariat rope, and where you would pull a leg and that can be typically how it's taught. You teach it with a lariat or with a hobble with a rope or something like that to get your horse to the ground. And the way it's done correctly is you take a leg and you just set it up to where the horse finds it on his own. And then eventually, if you want to evolve it into something that's done on cue without any ropes, like you see in the finished exhibition, you just slowly take away the ropes and add more cues. And think, you know, once your horse is used to it, you don't need to use the ropes anymore. And so that's what a lot of people have done to get it. And that's what I've done in the past. You know, first I started it with troubled horses, and then it was done as something to show, like, you know, look, my horse can do this on cue, and it looks great, and it's really fun, it's a good photo op. And so now more and more people are doing it. But when you lay a horse down with a lariat, or even when you're working with hobbles, and you're even if you're doing it really slow, there's a lot of risks involved. And actually, one of our guests later on the show is an expert at laying a horse down in this way, and she's very good, and she's got very good hands, and that would be Wylene. But if you're not really experienced, there's a lot that can go wrong when you take a horse's leg up, because their legs are their only way to get away from something. So you take that away from them, and you can get a pretty big reaction. So I wanted to see if I could get it done without the ropes. And I've seen other people do it where they could just give the horse a cue and the horse lays down all on its own. And I wanted to get that from the get-go to see if I could make it happen without ever using rope, just to see what I could do. And so that's what this DVD covers. And what we use in place of a rope or a hobble is positive reinforcement training. So what that is, positive reinforcement training, or people often know it as clicker training,
we've talked about that a lot. My wife Jennifer has been using it for 20 years.
Awesome! Yeah. That's great. I've started.
She
using
uses
it
for me too, Mary.
You can absolutely.
When I'm being bad, she clicks, and I know that I'm supposed to.
Oh, see, no, that wouldn't be the right way to use it, though.
Yeah.
Because with a clicker, you have to click. Yeah, if you were a big bad and she clicked you, then you'd be reinforced, because the click means yes, good, keep doing what you're doing because I like it. So
you really took it to the point, and to be honest, I wasn't always in favor of using the lariat to do that. So you've taken it to the point now where you can do it without that. I like that idea, especially using positive reinforcement.
Yeah, because I think because it's so popular, you see a lot of guys do it in demonstrations, there are more and more people who really want to do this with their horse. So I'm hoping to provide another option that I'm not good with the lariat. I don't know what to look for. I don't want to burn my hands. I don't want to rope burn my horse. I don't want to end up in a bad spot. Because again, to do it that way, it can be done correctly, but you have to have very good timing. You have to have a lot of experience. So there's a way you can still get this done. It takes longer, but I think the results are really good, because it's about what it takes to get to that point where your horse feels comfortable enough to lay down next to you. So using positive reinforcement training, what the gist of how you get this done is you're going to shape the horse's behavior. So anything my horse does that looks like the lay down, I'm going to click. And I've already trained my horse to understand when he hears the click, that means good. And I use food as a motivation. And so a lot of people shy away from the food, like, oh, my gosh, you know, I never do that. It's bribing my horse, or he's going to get muggy and pushy. And the way I see it, I think food is a great reward. You know, horses are prey animals, and they're motivated by safety, comfort, food. So a lot of us work hard to get the safety and comfort part right. We try to make our horse understand, you know, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to put you in a dangerous situation. You know, I'm going to keep you safe. And we try to give them comfort by, when they do the right thing, we release pressure. Well, why not add that third motivator in? Because it is very powerful. And to not use a tool because you might, you know, your horse might get pushy, it's kind of like saying, well, I saddled my horse and he bucked with the saddle, so I don't work with saddles anymore because that's what happened when I saddled him. So I'm just never going to saddle him again. It's like, no, you just teach him here's what this is, and here's the boundaries, and you can absolutely get that done with food, and teach your horse to be respectful and patient, and to wait for that reward, or that he'll only get that reward if he does X behavior. And so with the lay down, you are just shaping a series of tiny behaviors until it builds up into the lay down. So, you know, that would be, and you have to really watch your horse and say, well, what does he do before he lays down? Well, he lowers his head. So you might go out and click that. And then, you know, the next thing he'll do is he'll paw at the ground. So, okay, let's reward that. And the next thing he might do is circle. Okay, we'll reward that. So you just keep incrementally rewarding all these behaviors. And before long, your horse is going to be doing so many things that look like laying down that it's just going to enter his head like, oh, I should probably lay down. And so so that's how we get it there. And with the clicker, you know, there's endless possibilities on what you could teach. I use it to teach lead changes, to teach stop spins, all the reining maneuvers. I've used it a lot with my Road of the Horse colt Guthrie and had a lot of great success with it.
Well, you know, I like to hear that. And people can get that on your website, right, if they want to learn to do it. Good Christmas gift, for that matter.
Yes, we've got it filmed. We've got everything designed and ready to go. It's on the website for pre-order, and we should have it ready within the next week or so to ship out. So it's a 30-minute DVD. I use my own horse, obviously. And yeah, I'm going to have the DVD, and then I hope to have also produce like a companion booklet that goes a little bit more in depth on what to look for and when to reward.
Well, my driving pony has just the opposite problem. My little Hackney, he has the opposite problem because he likes to lay down and roll on everything. So he's very famous. As a matter of fact, on the internet, has 3 million views on his video of him rolling in the stream. And now I've had a couple times where he's tried to do it in the harness in the cart, and, you know, where I can see, oh, this is going to go bad very quickly. But then he figures out he can't, you know, he just can't move with the harness on. So I have the opposite problem. I need to teach him not to lay down. Just have to figure that out.
I've been studying positive reinforcement training for the last several years. You can actually put a behavior like that to a cue and then simply never give the cue. And what will happen is initially your horse might offer the behavior more, which I believe is known as an extinction burst. The behavior is on its way to not happening, but the horse will do it more. And then eventually he'll learn to only do it on cue. And so a horse that really loves to lay down, that's easy. That's your work already done for you as far as positive reinforcement goes. All you have to do is go find him doing it and click and give him a reward. And you do that consistently enough, and he's gonna get what's going on, and then you put a cue on it afterwards. So most training, we give the cue first, and then we make them do the behavior, and then we release. With this, you capture the behavior, and it's known as free shaping. When I capture my horse doing something completely naturally on his own volition, and I reward that, I'm just kind of shaping that behavior. And then later on, you pick a cue, and the cue can be anything. You could pull on his tail. You could say the word banana. or you could do something more practical, like tapping his foot or something of that nature. So, again, with the positive reinforcement, it's only limited to your imagination. And so you could actually work with that horse with that and teach him the behavior and teach him to do it on cue and then only give the cue when you want.
And then I could teach him not to do it all the time when we're in 3 feet of water. It's kind of hard to sit down and hang out with him when he's in 3 feet of water.
Exactly.
Which is his favorite thing to do. Well, let's bring somebody else into this conversation, and that's our first guest. Do you want to introduce him?
Yes. Okay. We've got a Philo Wild card on the show, and I think he's been on here a few times before, and we're getting ready to do a really cool colt starting event with him down in Florida, and that's Sean Patrick.
Good morning,
Sean.
Everyone. How are you?
Good.
Hey,
didn't you two play each other in trivia, and you got beat, Sean? Isn't that what I remember?
I don't remember it going down that way. I thought I was the winner.
I'm pretty sure I won.
Well, we'll have to do it again.
Yeah, I'm a legend in my own mind, so sometimes things get turned around. All right, so we are going to talk about today. We've got a really cool event coming up in Florida. We're going to do a cult starting symposium. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and who all's coming? I know I'm going to be there.
Yeah, well, Jim Anderson, who is from Alberta, just drove down and showed up a few days ago. And so he's settling in. He's going to be here hanging out with us for a while. And he's the third trainer in the teaching event. So it'll be myself and you, Mary, and then Jim. And we're going to set aside the mornings of the 3 days to work with three nicely bred, farm-raised 2-year-olds that are all reigning bloodlines. And we're not trying to sell it as a feral horse-starting competition. This is a teaching event where we're going to take three unstarted horses that are kind of raised the way we would normally raise a horse, where we handle them periodically and we do their feet and give them a bath and give them warmer. And so they're not afraid totally of humans, and they are halter broke, but they sure aren't started under saddle, and they've been turned out. So it's still going to be a lot of firsts, and the horse still can be quite, you know, uneducated and reactive, but they're not really, really tough, you know, older feral horses. So the mornings are going to be colt starting. And then in the afternoon, the three of us are going to be using some of our 4/6 geldings from the Road to the Horse competition to teach some very specific topics in 1-hour chunks. So it's going to be a whole day of 1-hour sessions from three different trainers, including 6 different horses. So we're looking forward to kind of presenting a wide range of topics and make it a fun event as well. We've got a great caterer, and we've have some vendors, and it's going to be just a great place to hang out. So looking forward to it.
Awesome, awesome. And I, what I really like about this event, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We talked about putting this on when I was down there in July. I like that it's not a competition, and it's just showing our programs. And of course, for us, you and me, who are going for the big title, the wild card champion, it's a great way for me. This is the way I think of it, to kind of work on my timing in a setting where you just kind of you've got a set time. You're not at home, and so, you know, when I'm at home with a colt, you just put 15 minutes on it, and maybe that's enough for the day, or maybe you want to stay in there and work with it for a couple of hours on something. And so when you're given the time, you know, you've got to work this horse from 10 to 12, you really have to – it challenges you as a colt starter to work on your timing and not overdo your work, but also to use every minute wisely. So what would you say with your colt, what's the most important thing for you to get done in that first session? I know I've been asked that a lot in preparation for Road to the Horse.
In the first session, I need the horse to yield to me and move a little bit. I want the horse to kind of find me and hook on a little bit, where there's some kind of relationship starting. It doesn't have to be, you know, ingrained yet, where there's 100% trust, but you have to build on something. So I want some movement. I want some trust. I want the horse hooking on, but I also want the horse, you know, getting semi halter broke and learning how to yield to the sides, learning how to, you know, feel a very, very small trap and know that everything's okay and to come into the pressure. I also, in the first day, I'd want them accepting a saddle. I mean, it might not be in the cards for the first day, but hopefully they can accept the saddle, because some of these really reactive colts, you don't want to, you know, do 3 hours of work, get somewhere, and then add the saddle and try to jump right on them, because, you know, that's such a new feel and a new claustrophobia to the horse that it takes them a little while to get, you know, comfortable with it. So if you put it on fairly early, you know, I think it'll lead to an earlier ride as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm totally in agreement with you there on the saddle. I think, especially when you're working with a colt, whether it's for competition and you've got a, you know, X amount of time, or even when you're at home, or training horses for the public, you have only so much time from that colt. He only gives you so much time when he's going to listen, when he's going to move out for you, when he's going to be focused. And so a lot of the exercises, I find that a lot of the exercises that I do on the ground to get my colt ready for the ride, why not just do it with a saddle? Instead of having to teach him all this stuff and get him tired and then saddle him, and then now I have to move him out all over again.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have, over the years, when you're starting a lot of colts, you know, you learn what works for yourself and what doesn't. And I found that in the early days, I would do far too much on the ground, and I would get the horse possibly a little bit dull. And then when I go to climbing on, my forward isn't there. So, you know, as Dr. Miller calls it, he calls it controlled flight. When you're first getting on a colt and there's a little bit of fear still, and you can kind of use that to your advantage. So a little smooch or a tap of the leg or a touch on the hindquarters, not a lot of leg, of course, at that moment. But the horse will maybe scooch forward and find forward, and then you can reward him for it. So, you know, I used to maybe stay on the ground for a week, 2 weeks, even a month, you know, with different horses, and then I would have an issue with forward. And so I think there's a bit of a momentum to it if you want to get it done, you know, in the most efficient way. I think when they're really young like this, it's not as important as when they're older, but you can go a little bit slower with a two-year-old. It just depends on, you know, what you're going to ask for, but...
Yeah, you know, I've been in the same boat with colts. When I first started, the first job I had, it was very, very groundwork heavy, and we would get those things bomb-proof on the ground before getting on, which when I was starting out, that was really safe for me, and I needed that because, you know, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I had no timing, and so I had to dumb that horse down by, you know, desensitizing, but then you get on and you have no go. So you kind of have to really liven that colt up to get him moving. So I heard a clinician put it really well. I think it was Martin Black, who will actually be a future guest on our show, and he said, you have to rise to the level of the horse at some point in your career. And that has been kind of almost a mantra for me, because once you get your timing right with these colts and keep them alive, you know, keep the life in them, keep the energy in them, you can use that. And I have had my most resistance-free colt start in the last 2 years by letting them be a horse and letting them, you know, not trying to blow the flight out of them, but using exactly what you said, that controlled flight, and say, okay, you want to go? Let's go. We're going to put some structure to it. But when you do that, it gets a little scary because they might do more things that colts could do when you put the first ride on them. Do you ever have nerves when you get on a colt for the first time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I totally am following what you're saying. I completely agree. I think in the early days, I needed the horse to be quieter before I got on, and now I don't because I'm later on in my career. But when I get on and actually let go of a colt more, I actually feel safer than when I start trapping them too much. So let's say if you give them a lot of freedom, you know, and you're trying to slowly add structure to it, as you said, you know, I know that using one rein over, say, two reins, or using, you know, a different kind of pressure instead of a lot of heavy leg pressure or squeezing. So I kind of know what will set him off and what won't, and what will get his attention back to me and maybe keep me safe a little bit better nowadays. So, you know, if you're letting the horse kind of travel forward on open reins and he does go to squirreling around on you, you know, without reprimanding him or getting after him and get into him too much, you can just use the right pressure to maybe guide that energy to where the, you know, the front end comes back down and maybe the horse actually, you know, controls himself. And if they just want to go to humping up a little bit, you know, at this point, that's not a big deal. What you're trying to avoid is those panic bucks and those, you know, a horse that's really flipping over or acting crazy. So when you do it the way that we're doing it now, Mary, and I mean, maybe 20 years ago, a lot of us young trainers didn't have these tools. But now that we have these tools, we keep them pretty calm, even though we're starting them fast, don't we? I mean, don't you find that we actually have less bucking and less problems when we start them the way we are?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's a, it, you know, it's all about your timing. It's not that the potential isn't there, but you kind of get the knowledge under your belt to say, okay, if I let you go right now, it's going to be okay. And you know how to help the horse out. In the beginning, I had to make the horse help me because I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to get them to where they wouldn't offer up anything. But you're doing the horse a disservice if you continue to do that. If it's going to be like a trail riding horse for a 97-year-old lady, you're fine kind of really getting that horse dead broke and half ignoring everything. But if it's going to be a performance horse, if you want to start a performance horse and this thing's got to go in 30 days and start working on cattle and he's got to be light and feely, you can take the softness, you can take the sensitivity out of the horse, but putting that back in is very, very difficult. And so you mentioned trapping the colt earlier, like how that's maybe what you did initially. What do you mean by trapping the colt?
Well, I think it's pretty common for a human rider to do certain things when they are in a moment of uncertainty of their own. So say you're on a horse and they surge or buck or rear or scooch or whatever that isn't exactly what you're after, it's pretty normal for the rider to clamp their legs and grab their face. And in that moment, you know, what's best for the horse might be to open your legs and maybe open one side of the rein, maybe just slightly close the inside rein or something to that nature, where you do use a small pressure and try to guide him again, but you're not giving him a trap or a pressure that he doesn't know what to do with. And so a lot of times it's counterintuitive to actually let go more and then, you know, guide lighter when you're trying to gain control. So I try to use things to give me more control. Like when I'm having an issue with a colt, I know that I'm okay in a round pen because it's only 60 feet. You can't really go too far. And I know that one side of the rein, I can start teaching them how to give and stay forward without blocking them or making them panic too much. And if he goes to running or humping up just a little bit, you know, in a moment of uncertainty, I'm okay with that. So, you know, that's kind of part of the deal, right? Even though it doesn't happen as often. But I just want to show the colt how to do things and try to keep it positive instead of, you know, clamping down on him or trying to block him or trying to control him in a way that, you know, he doesn't understand. Because in that moment, he's just going to either shut off or want to evade. And so I want him to, he can be scared a little bit here and there because he's going to be, he's brand new at it. But when he finds it, it should be a good deal for him.
So it's interesting whenever you were, when you're talking about starting colts, that A, from the very, very beginning of working with these horses, you have in mind the route you're going to take because of his end career, a horse that his end goal is going to be a pleasure animal for less than athletic pursuits, that starting part is going to maybe work out a little bit different than a horse that you want in the end to be extremely sensitive and quick. When you start a youngster, and maybe you can both answer this one at a time, when you start a horse that doesn't have necessarily a career goal, for example, when you've got horses that you're starting for competitions, you basically get handed the horse and you need to get it to a point where you can win the competition. But you don't start that horse knowing that he's going to become a reiner or knowing that he's going to become a mounted shooting horse or something like that. Whenever you start them like that, do you sometimes start down the path of, I want this horse to become an athletic competitor, and then get partway down that road and have to maybe veer off to a different career path in the long term as you learn how reactive and how much of that horse's, how much he's willing to give to you versus how quickly he'll shut down?
Do you want to go first, Mary?
I do. I think, and Sean will probably agree with me, that for my colt program, and probably within the first 6 months, every horse is going to get the same deal. I think whether the horse is going to go down the road and be a trail horse or pleasure horse, I'll still get on them. I'll still have the same time frame on putting that first ride on, because putting that ride on, there's a lot to their mind that sometimes you can't break through with groundwork to do. I like to at least get on them and put a few rides on, because it does change their mind in a really amazing way. But in the beginning, it's just about getting their body parts broke. And I've noticed, like with my horse Guthrie, I've done very little desensitizing to that horse. I have not sat there with him like I would have done several years ago and slapped sticks and strings and flagged and flagged and flagged until he just would ignore it. But by virtue of getting control of his feet and doing what I need to do to get ready for this competition, yielding his hind quarters, making him side path, fore quarters, teaching him to spin, teaching him to stop, teaching him softness, you get into their mind and it quiets them down. And so even though he's a competition horse for me, and he's got to be very light, and I want to work him on cattle, and he's got to be competitive and feely, I can still put a kid on him right now. And I do a lot of things with the colt. Like, I've roped all his feet with a lariat. I've drug stuff off of him. He understands how to stand tied. He could stand tied for hours. He understands hobbles in a very safe and sensible way. So if tomorrow I had to sell him and the lady who bought him just was going to ride him once a month and only on trails, and, you know, she had a stroke and she can't do as much as she would like to, it would actually not take very much for me to get him prepared for that kind of lifestyle. And so I find that the focus for my colts now in the first 30 days is getting to their feet. You get their feet, you get their mind. And so I'm able to not have to sit there and, you know, say, okay, well, you're going to be this specific horse, so I need to do these specific things. It's all about getting to their feet.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that foundation is foundation. And when you want to specialize in a discipline later on or a certain lifestyle, you know, you can take a movement and accelerate it or perfected a little bit more, you know, such as a reining or cow horse that needs a turnaround and a stop. You can have a horse that stops wonderfully, you know, or you can have a horse that stops 30 feet. So it's really the same principles, just you've taken one and worked on it much more than the other horse. So, but the foundation is key. So I think if you're in harmony with a horse, you know, he's neither ahead of you or behind you with your driving aids or your hands or, you know, what you're asking of him. If he's ahead of you, you got to work on it. If he's behind you, you have to tell you as well how much to push and what to work on, and regardless of kind of what's going to happen 2 years down the road. If you have a horse that really refuses to go forward, then you're working on that. If you have a horse that is having a hard time settling and finding rhythm and relaxing their top line, then you're going to do things that really work on that. You're going to work on everything with every horse, but you're going to always try to find the balance, you know, so I think the horse dictates a whole bunch of where you go with your day or with your month or with, you know, the program. Not that the principles change, just maybe the amount of time or the emphasis you put on one thing can change, you know. Maybe you're doing groundwork with a horse that's very flighty and you ask for a lot of movement, and then maybe you bring them forward a step or two and then really reward them and let them know it's safe. Whereas the real pushy, bold horse that was raised in the backyard and isn't afraid of anything and won't hardly move, maybe you move them a little bit and then back them up 2 steps just to get that balance back where they wait for you and they don't just feel too comfortable walking and standing on top of you. So same principle, just trying to put it in balance. One's afraid of you, one's not, and maybe you want them standing 3 feet from you, not too close, not too far. That'll be one of the situations where the horse tells you where to be for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I'm really excited for this event coming up because we're going to get to see three different horses and probably have three totally different experiences with colts and three programs. So, and as well as showing what it looks like down the road. So this is going to be such a good event. And so what are the dates again? Because I'm coming down there early. So what are the dates and how can they get tickets?
Okay, January 2, 3, and 4, it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They can go to my website, SeanPatrickTraining.com, and there's an info page there, and then it takes you to an online store where you can purchase the tickets We have 3-day tickets, 1-day tickets, and then we have a really exciting VIP dinner on Saturday night with Nashville recording artist Julie Roberts, which is going to be a 2-person acoustic set with a really great caterer. We're going to have gourmet coffee and hot chocolate and wonderful lunches provided. So it's going to be a fun event. There is a local hotel with a really good rate if you just ask for the Three Amigo rate. And tickets are selling fast, so make sure, you know, if you're interested, that you get a seat, especially at the VIP dinner, because that's going to go pretty fast here.
Awesome, awesome. Can't wait. Well, this is going to be such a one-of-a-kind event and something you're not going to see everywhere. And I know from my point of view, we're going to be there to just share everything we have. So, well, thank you for being on today and giving us a little insight into your cult program. And I guess we'll be seeing you in January.
Great. I'm looking forward to having you down here, Mary. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, John.
All right, thanks for coming on.
All right. See you guys.
All right, see ya. And, of course, you know, we got to mention, too, that Sean lives at the beach. I mean, you know, he's about 15 minutes from the ocean. And New Smyrna Beach is one of the nicest beaches we have here in Florida. So that isn't too bad either. You can kind of combine a trip. Or if you've got people that want to come along, your family wants to come along, and they're not into training horses at all, just send them to the beach. It is Florida.
Or Disney World. That's what I'm going to be doing.
Disney World, that's right. We're going to take you to Disney World. We got to work out a day.
That's my big bucket list. I've never been.
We got to work out a day. We're taking you there. So we got to figure that day out and get you over there, okay?
Yeah, that's going to be good.
And, you know, actually, I think it's still going to be going on. A friend of ours who hosts the driving radio show once a month, David Saunders, is driving a carriage in the parade at Disney World. And I think he's still going to be doing it that weekend, so we'll have to find out about that too. But we'll definitely get that worked out. Well, Sean's always a good guy, and we appreciate him joining us. We're going to take a little break here on the Mary Kitzmiller Training Edition of Horses in the Morning for a song. And I thought, well, I know Mary, you inspire a lot of people to get out there and get on their horse and ride. So I have a song by Stephanie Quayle called You Inspire Me. We'll be back after that with Extreme Wyleen, who I think you're going to like a lot.
You show me endless possibilities.
Well, that is Stephanie Quayle with her song, You Inspire Me. You can find all of her music at stephaniequayle.com or search for her on Facebook, or on iTunes, rather. Just search for Stephanie Quayle. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Mary Kitzmiller in her maiden voyage here on Horses in the Morning for her first monthly training episode. And you're doing great so far. You haven't sunk the ship yet, Mary, so we're glad of that.
Good deal, good deal. That was the plan. Just a little better than terrible.
You're doing great. And, of course, we have Coach Jen, the producer, here with us today. And we are here every day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We have something a little bit different for you every day. Tomorrow, Jamie, the regular co-host here, is back. And she and I do a little thing on Fridays. If it's your first time listening to the show, we do a little thing on Fridays called Really Bad Ads, where our listeners submit bad Craigslist ads about selling horses or trailers or whatever, and we make a little fun of them. And it's our most popular segment on the show every week. So if you've never heard that before, tune in on Fridays, because it's a good time. We've been doing it now for 4 years, and it hasn't gotten old yet. Mary, you know, one of the things I learned about you here real quick is that you are quite the the Texas Pickers girl. You're in the junk.
Yeah, we have a little side business that my mom and I do, and we do kind of cool eclectic artwork that we sell at shows, and we're going to have at our booth at Road to the Horse, and we did gangbusters with it last year, and we just kind of pick up whatever we see at a side of the road or an antique show or flea market, and slap a coat of paint on it and put some words on it and make it a piece of artwork. So it's
truly
kind of
are
different.
Like the Texas Pickers. You could have your own TV show.
I know. This is what I keep saying. but yeah, we take some really cool things. Some of my favorite pieces, we found some old Model T doors and on, you know, old Ford trucks. And, they're all rusted out and painted. I painted some like vintage looking rodeo posters on it. And so just kind of weird, crazy.
So
stuff,
you hang
stuff
a whole
like
door
that,
on the wall,
whatever.
Like a poster?
Yep. They're pretty
oh, cool.
light. They're pretty light. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
that's
got,
really cool.
It's a lot of fun. And so when I'm not on a horse, that's usually what I'm doing is in the shop painting. And my mom comes up with some really great things. She's an artist in her own right. And so we put our brains together and come up with some fun stuff.
Very cool. Now, can anybody, do you have Christmas gifts that you offer on your website of any of this stuff?
Yes, we've got a few pieces online, more to come on the website, MaryKitzmiller.com. And what we're offering now is a sign. It's a horse head cut out of rusty steel. And then cut out of that horse head is a saying, follow your heart. And that can be hung inside or out. It's very durable. And we've got those in turquoise and white and red. And then we can also do a custom sign that will have your horse's or your ranch name cut out of the silhouette horse head. So we've got those as well. And then I have one last sign, a really cool sign we cut out of metal with a plasma torch and painted, and it's a horse head on a background that is one of my favorite sayings, and it's she never shook the stars from their pointed courses, but she loved good men and she rode good horses.
That's good. I like that. Hey, could you for me for next Christmas, can you find a Model T door and paint some minions on it for me?
Minions,
I would love that.
Like from Despicable Me?
Yes, I love Minions. I have 4 foot of Minions here in the studio, and it would be really cool to have them on a Model T door. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, I may have one laying around. I may have one left.
Okay,
so
get with Jennifer on that. It'll be a good gift next year, Jennifer. I'm just saying. I love Minions. I wish I had Minions. If only I could have like 50 Minions to help me do all the work. That'd be great. But I haven't figured that one out yet. Well, let's introduce our next guest. She probably wishes she had minions, too. She's always busy and always doing stuff.
Exactly. Well, our next guest is one of the stars of the film Wild Horse Wild Ride, and some of you may know her as Extreme Wylene. Please welcome Wylene Wilson-Davis.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
How's it going? It's going great.
Don't you wish you had about 50 minions to help you out, too?
I do. I think everyone wishes they had extra minions laying around.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, some of you, if you guys aren't familiar with Wyleen, I'm sure some of you have to be because she's been everywhere. She's had a lot of success. She does the Mustang makeovers, and I believe you won in 2009, if I'm not mistaken. And
yes,
that
and
was the ride
also...
that...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you're fine. Well, that was the ride that was featured on the really cool movie Wild Horse Wild Ride, which is a documentary that followed a number of Mustang trainers and their journeys. And so what else have you done with the Mustang?
Well, just following that, while I was also filming Wild Horse Wild Ride, I was also training another Mustang. His name was Gator. And there was a Mountain Valley Mustang makeover in Cedar up in Utah, and I won that Mustang makeover just about a month and a half after Wild Horse Wild Ride was done. So from Fort Worth, I drove up to Utah and ended up winning that Mustang makeover. And then from there, you know, I just kept saying, okay, I'm not going to do another one. And then I know how I feel about that, Mary. I was like, okay, I'm not going to do another one. You know, I need to focus on other things. And then sure enough, I'd get pulled into, you know, thinking about it and contemplating, okay, let's do one more just to see what we can get and what kind of horse will come out of this show. And every year it just seemed like it just got better and better. And even Rembrandt, the horse that I had in Wild Horse Wild Ride, he was so talented and so good. And you know, you just don't think you can have one who's different. You know what I'm saying? And so it was just nice to actually, each Mustang makeover, they're all different personalities, and it's just fun to have that uncharted territory where you get to start over and have just like this journey with this random wild horse. And currently I've trained 11 for the Mustang makeover, and, you know, and just last year for, when ABC had contacted me about doing a reality show through their program, and they had come to me and said, you know, we're really wanting to do this reality show. And I was like, oh, I just don't know if I want to do it. You know, I'm not sure. And they were like, no, we really, really want you to. And then I ended up agreeing to do that. And then when I did, I by far got the best horse I've ever owned. I love him. His name's King of Hearts. And I showed him last year at the Mustang Million. And he was sixth place, right beneath old Mary Kitzmiller. So it was a really, really fun show. And then that ended up airing on Nat Geo Wild. And it was a lot of fun, and you know what? You just never know where you're going to be led, you know, and it just ended up being really neat. So I've really loved and appreciated being around the Mustangs. They've absolutely changed my life 100%.
Yeah, these makeovers, I don't know what it is about them. They are relentlessly addicting. And
yes.
I've been in the same boat, like, you know, I need to move on. I'm in a different spot in my life, and I don't need to do another one. And then it comes around, and you're like, oh, my God, the deadline's approaching. I better get in. And, I've had a small fraction of the experience you've had of you know, just going and doing a few of them and having some success. And not only is it just a blast, and the people are the best group of people you will ever show with. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've competed against who they'll give you tips in the warm-up pen. And, you know, if you need help with something, if you want to go ride with them, it's just a really great group of people. And that show on Nat Geo Wild, that was called Mustang Millionaire, and that was a really great show. And that kind of followed some of the real, not just the big names, just about, you know, it had a really good cross-section of what these competitors are and what they do and how they prepare. And so, yeah, that's been a lot of fun. And then you and I just did a clinic in Hamilton, Texas, in October. And that's kind of where I saw, well, we did something together in June, the Mustang Family Reunion. And I have to tell you, I saw this thing you were doing with your horses and that you were having your students do. And the first time I saw it, I was like, well, that's crazy. You know, what is that? And so,
what is that?
Yeah, so what I was looking at, we were at a clinic where everybody, there's several clinicians, and we're all doing demos on different topics and participation clinics, and I look over at the arena, and I see all these people leaning forward and touching their horses on the neck, like almost all the way between their ears. I'm like, what the heck is that? That didn't make any sense at all. And one of my friends rode over, and she goes, oh, yeah, you know, this is what you do, and you teach your horse to stop by touching on the neck. So I thought, well, that's kind of fun. And by the end of the clinic, a lot of people could just reach down right in front of the saddle, touch their horse on the neck, and they'd stop. And I thought, well, that's kind of okay, I guess. And then when we did the clinic, we did the triple threat clinic in Hamilton, I saw it again, and I thought, well, that might be pretty cool, but I just don't see me using it. And then I've had a young girl working for me, and she's been putting who has worked with Wylene in the past, so she knows it, and it's called the basic handle, and she's been doing it on my colts, and so now it's something I'm like, okay, I got to figure out what this is. So why don't you explain exactly what this is that you're doing at clinics and why it works and who can use it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've had several people come up to me and say, how do you get your horses to stop so nice without pulling on them? And it's something that I was raised doing. It's something I grew up doing. My mom, back in 1965, she not only college rodeoed, but she traveled around with a man by the name of Monty Foreman. And a lot of people might not know him. He died early in the 80s. But he was a horseman that was beyond his years, and he taught the basic handle, and it was that touch on the next stop. And what he would do is, basically, you have to be able to put a handle on a horse, a young horse, and take them from wild to mild as soon as possible. Now, back in the 60s, there wasn't very much groundwork going around. You know that as well as I do. So he liked to just get on and go, and he would use this method to teach his horses. And so all that requires is that you take your reins, and the first thing you do is you just run your hand all the way up that horse's mane, and literally where your hand is touching the horse's mane. Then from there, you slide your hand and lead the horse's nose around and bend him to a stop. And when you do that, the more times you repeat that, the quicker the horse learns. Now, it is really foreign, and horses might not understand it in the beginning, just like anything. But the more times you repeat that, the faster, the quicker the horse picks it up. And before you know it, within just a few short hours, sometimes even a few short days, you can be going along on a loose rein, and you can literally just drop your hand and have the horse come to a complete stop. Because the horse really just wants to know, you know, is it forward, is it back, is it right, is it left? And so growing up, we used to do the basic handle on everything. And I rode crazy barrels and, you know, crazy runaways, you know, my whole life. But I could still have a handle on them, and that was the biggest thing. And so that's where I kind of developed my knack, if you will, for riding untrainable horses. And that's why the Mustang Makeover was so appealing to me, because I knew I could train one. And it's just really been successful, and I've had a lot of students who have seen it, but they were really skeptical. But once they applied it, they really saw that it's really beneficial, and it does work. And the nice thing about it is you can take that basic handle and you can teach it just in those few, you know, maybe 2 weeks of the training. And then you can move on from there. But it's really nice to know that you have that connection, and you also have the ability to ask your horse first, hey, do you mind slowing your feet down? And when you do that, it's really, really great, because you're asking the horse first. You don't just take it from him. So it's a really nice way to ask your horse. And I've seen big time changes in horses from clinics and just different private lessons. And so it's just been really rewarding to see it come full circle. And it's a lot of fun to watch it. And I like taking a horse that's a challenge and saying, okay, this horse has been running away for 10 years. How do we stop it? Instead of pulling back, we actually release the reins. And it's just kind of that reverse psychology on the horse. And they go, wait a second, aren't you going to pull on me? And then when you don't, they start figuring out, okay, you're talking to me. I need to listen and pay attention. So it's been really great, like I said. And that's where I get to touch on the next stop to step off of my horses when they're running wide open. And all those fun things that I do, it all starts with the touch on the neck first.
So it's, well, yeah, I think it's a great concept. And I'm always looking for tools for my tool bag. And so that was really appealing. And at first I saw, this is a fun novelty thing. And then you know, riding my own colts that Maggie, you know, my assistant has ridden and done this with. I was on one yesterday, actually, and she kind of wanted to take off at a lope a little faster, and she was kind of building speed. I'm like, I need to shut you down. And I started to bend her around because that's typically what I do, and she was kind of grabbing the bit, and so I'm like, well, let's try this. And I put my hand down on her neck, and she buried her little butt in the ground. So
yeah.
I think it's a really fun thing to try. And I agree with you. I think colts, especially, they're just looking for help. That's all they're looking for. And no horse really has an agenda. They're not trying to outsmart you or outwit you or get out of work or anything like that. They just need help. And
right.
So I think it's really cool tool to put on your young horses as well as your more experienced colts.
Right, absolutely.
And,
yeah. And you know, with the Mustangs, it really speeds up the process. I find that the sooner you get their feet moving, the faster their mind works. And if you have an idea of what you want to do, the horse is just looking for that leadership. And once you give them something to do with their feet, and then what I do is I'll speed them up, and then I'll just run my hand up their mane, and I'll just slow my body down and lead their nose and bend them to a stop. And then that can transfer into a rollback. And there's several other little different things you can do as a cue beforehand. And with that, even young horses, even old horses that have old bad habits, it's really nice to know that you just have those basic fundamentals underneath you before you go on to the advanced stuff. And that's why I really push and practice doing the basic handle just in the beginning to really give that introduction to the horse so the horse understands that you're the leader and that you have the idea in your mind and you know what to do. Because like you said, they're just looking, they're not trying to be mean or counterfeit or anything. They're just waiting for someone to tell them what to do. And I find that for me, it's the fastest way to get them going from being crazy wild into just being soft and mild. And that's what I really always look for.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as cues go and giving signals to your horse, I think a lot of people will agree. You know, when you teach your horse, and this is something I learned in training reining horses, when you teach your horse to stop or turn or any of those maneuvers, you never really want to rely too heavily on one cue. Like, you know, of course, my horses can stop when I pull on the reins. And they can stop from only pulling on the reins. And sometimes I'll really work on just that part of the stop. You know, can I just draw on you and have you respond to that and understand what that means? But a finished stop has three or four different cues. It's the relaxing of your seat. It's saying the word whoa. It's taking your legs off. It's drawing on them and getting them soft. And I think that's a key to keep a horse really soft is to have all of those signals to work off of and to work consistently off of. So you're not just pulling on your horse's mouth, you know, or you're not just saying whoa and hoping for the best. And it's really a good way to kind of build in a really solid foundation. And you have three or four different ways to help out your horse. So I see this as something, you know, just another signal I can give to help my horse. And I've even played with putting it on, you know, my older broke horse. Well, I've done it with my Sixes colt, and it's just something else. And where I see the application for me personally, I'm like, ooh, this will really help with my bridleless.
Yeah.
It's just another cue. Yeah. We're not just relying on the bridle. So that's really fun. And I see it as a great way to help the rider's confidence. Have you seen a difference in your riders? I mean, we've talked about the horses.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Because I've always said in clinics, you know, and I've traveled a lot and I've seen a lot of different clinicians out there and a lot of different riders and different expertises. And what's interesting to me is when I watch clinics, I never see anyone teach what to do when something goes wrong. Everyone teaches control and being perfect and having everything perfect. What I do in my clinics is I push you out of your comfort zone and I say, okay, when everything hits the fan, what are you going to do to stop your horse? How do you do that? Because it's nice to be pretty and have your horse in frame, but when a duck flies out of the bushes, what do you do? And we practice that. And I teach people how to fall off their horses by reaching up and grabbing the horse around the neck. Because when you go to, if and when a horse panics, and they spook. The more you pull on them, the faster they run. And so we do this in clinics. I literally have people fall off their horse, grab onto the horse's neck, and slow the horse's feet down, and it's never not worked. And that's why I love using it as a demonstration. And so I love seeing people go, oh, my gosh, I know what to do now. It all makes sense, and I'm not afraid anymore. And then putting that into jumping and stepping off of their horses and standing up on their horses. Yes, their confidence absolutely 100% changes. And it's really neat to see them get that aha moment where they realize that it's worth it and their horse is worth it and they know what to do next. And so
you know,
I love seeing that.
Well, and that's by your extreme Wylene. That's how you got the name. But I like that because I'll tell you what, I've been to those clinics too, and we all watch and everything's all perfect. And the clinician does not want anything to go wrong because it kind of makes them look bad. So they avoid that at all costs. Yet we're all out here riding when our horses aren't perfect. And I had a turkey fly out of a tree and land on my horse's head one day on a trail ride on the side of a mountain. I mean, fortunately, that horse didn't do anything. You know, he was good about it. Scared the crap out of me more than the horse. But, you know, that's the kind of things that do happen. My pony the other day bolted. It was the first time he bolted. I didn't know what to do with this particular pony. I'm not sure he knew what was going to stop him either. And those are the situations that are hard to prepare for, but there are certain things you can do, and it sounds like you're doing them. So good for you.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun doing that. And like I said, I push people out of their comfort zones and they'll say, oh, I will never do this on my horse. And I'm like, if you come to a clinic, you are going to do that. And then at the end, they thank me because they're like, I needed someone to push me out of my comfort zone. And when you do that, then their confidence changes. And let me tell you, their horse follows suit. They go, okay, my rider knows what they're doing. I'm following them. But of course, if you don't have leadership, then the horse just assumes that position and that role. And that's where you run into problems. And that's why horses get scared and they run off and buck and bad things happen because people don't know what to do. They just lock up and go into the fetal position and scream, you know. And so their horses really don't know what to do. So when you teach a horse what to do under pressure and when something goes wrong, you can get some really neat results. And I've seen it all across the nation, all over the place, you know, just I really like to take the worst situation and say, okay, we're going to teach you how to ride and guide right now. We're going to teach you what to do when something goes wrong. And then that builds their confidence, and it's really rewarding to see that.
That is cool. That is cool.
Speaking of, getting out of my comfort zone.
Oh, Mary, we're going to have you call back. Your connection just went south on us, so give us a call back. Let's do this. We're running out of time. Let's tell everybody where they can find you and what your schedule is.
Okay, well, you can find me on extremewylene.com. That is my website. I'm also on Facebook. I have a Wild West Horsemanship page on Facebook. And I'm actually preparing to have a baby. My husband and I are expecting our first baby in February. So I'm taking a few months off. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we're really excited. And my last clinic was just about 3 weeks ago, and now I'm on full mom duty. And then from there, I always post my schedule on my website, and I also have a Twitter account. But Facebook is a great way to reach me as well. And if anyone has any questions, they can definitely email me through that. My email address, if you want that, is sugarpony@gmail.com. And that's sugarpony@gmail.com. That's where they can reach me.
Very good. Now, you know, my co-host on the show, Jamie, rode up until about 7 months, and then she was back on after a month. So do you have a target goal in mind for after you have the baby?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I'll be right. I mean, I still ride now, and I'm about 7.5 months pregnant now. But I have two other children, and I was back on a horse as soon as I was able to get on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's what keeps you in shape, quite honestly. So I'm excited for it. And the new 2015 schedule will come out. And we're always looking for new venues, new places to go. And that's why we'd come up with this triple threat clinic that Mary and Miranda did. And it was a really, really great time. And so we're always looking for new locations. And if someone decides they want to host the clinic, they always ride for free. So that's a good thing for these listeners to think about. And we definitely want to come out and help you. So just let us know how we can help, and we'd love to see you down the road.
ExtremeWylene.com is the website. Check it out. Thank you, and good luck with the baby.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Wileen.
So we have you back. You got your connection
back?
I'm back.
Yeah, I dropped off
good.
A little bit.
Yep. No problem. Well, she was fun.
Yeah, she's a really cool chick and you know, big personality. If you've ever seen anything she's ever been in, and, you know, she definitely lived up to the nickname. And, you know, she, when I first started these Mustang makeovers, I would get on mine in 2 weeks, and I thought, you know, it's pretty awesome. That made me pretty bad. But she's on them, like, the first day. And then, like, riding in canyons the second day.
Yeah. Bridle is the third day. Saddle is the fourth day.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So yeah, she's a very gutsy rider. And so her clinics are really good. We didn't get into – I looked over – we're doing this triple threat clinic together. And I looked over, and she's got all her riders blindfolded. I'm like, oh, my God, it's like a crazy trust fall exercise. And But people really enjoy the clinics and you know, they always put a big smile on their face. So those riders' confidence type clinics they're just absolutely priceless.
Terrific. Well, before we run out of time today, thank you so much, Mary, for joining us. Give out your website again.
MaryKitzmiller.com.
And the next place you can see Mary is right after Christmas here in Florida, not too far from us, along the coast, right below Daytona Beach is New Smyrna Beach. And Jennifer put up the link to the clinic that's happening over there, the Three Amigos Clinic. You can find out more information about that if you want to come over and check it out. We're definitely going to try and get over there one day to say hi to you guys. So we'll get to see you there. It's not too far from us. And you can listen to Horses in the Morning every morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. If you want to listen to past episodes, it's horsesinthemorning.com. We also do, the first Thursday of every month, we do a Road to the Horse with Tammy Sarant, hosts a Road to the Horse episode. So we'll be getting a lot more serious about coverage, and we'll be at Road to the Horse this year. You're going to have to join me for a couple minutes during our coverage of Road to the Horse when we're there. We'll definitely have to do that.
Oh, but, yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
Merry Christmas, Mary, and we'll see you again next month, the second Thursday of the month, right after you get done with your clinic, actually.
Yeah. We've got working out some cool guests, so it's going to be good. Going to be a good show.
And in the meantime, I got to get a hold of you after the show today. We can see if we can figure out the whole heading off to Disney World thing. We'll have to figure that out. It's important. We have to get you for your first trip. You're
That's
surprised.
The most important thing. Like, all right,
I know,
from the side.
Child that's ever been there. That's terrible.
I know, it kind of blotch on my childhood.
I have to fix that. All right, Mary, we'll fix it. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. See you, Mary. Merry Christmas.
All right, see ya.